Upper Richmond pastures. Right, you guys. It's not working, I don't know. It might come on.
Not working at all?
I have to raise your voice a bit.
Oh, wow.
Cable's all right. I
don't know, I'm trying to.
Do you want to try? I'll come a little bit forward. Does it work? Does it work, the microphone?
No.
Okay. You can hear me? Yeah. Okay. So as normally, what I speak about when I go to these kind of places is normally I try to speak about Inyane Halacha. It's interesting. It's fun. People. Oh, I think there's. Is that fun? There's a brocha. No. Okay, fine. So normally I speak about Inyane Halacha. Normally, Derek Klau. So I tell a true story. Yesterday morning after just before Shacharis, my daughter was awake, and I had this whole ganze shir that I was going to give over on the hilchas and the halachas of certain things and Rishonim and the Achronim and all kind of geschmackes stuff, and I realized, wonderful. I always wanted to be a singer. It's better. Oh, fantastic. Okay, so I had this whole halacha inyan I want to talk about, but then yesterday morning I had a shtickle. I don't want to call it Ruach HaKodesh, but there's a Gemara, I think it's in Baba Basra, I think it says that the children, they have a shtickle nevuah. I don't want to say my daughter has nevuah. I don't think she does. She probably says she does, but I don't think she does. My daughter's 6 years old. So yesterday morning I was cleaning up the menorah. There's bits of oil and wax, the whole thing on the foil. I was cleaning up yesterday morning before Shacharis. And my daughter comes up to me, and she's 6 years old. It's not pasha having six-year-old children, because they don't have, they don't have that kind of awkwardness that people, so a lot of people are afraid to ask certain questions, because they think, what are you going to think of me if I ask this question? What will the neighbours think, right? I think I'm a bit weird. So my daughter, they have that kind of innocence, so normally, she asks incredible questions, constantly. So normally, she asks me a good question, so I'll give her the more nevukim, I'll tell her to go, take it, and go. But today, I saw the Rambam didn't deal with the question she asked me, so I had to actually think of an answer myself, which is Nish Pasha. So my daughter, who's 6 years old, she came up to me yesterday morning, and she said to me, Daddy, I have a question. I was like, please be something I've learned. Please be Baba Metzia Kinyanim, but it wasn't. And she said to me, Daddy, if you were alive at the time of the Maccabees, I said, yes, would you have been a Maccabee? So I did what I always do whenever my daughter asks me anything about how frum we are, which I always say, Vada, yeah, 100%. 100%, everything, yep, 100%, I would have been a Maccabee. But then afterwards, I started thinking about it. I was walking her to school and back from school, and I started to realise afterwards, I hope I would have been, but I'm a bit concerned that perhaps I wouldn't have been. Because I was thinking about it, and I was thinking, you know, let's say you were alive in the time of Hanukkah. I know Hanukkah's gone now, but just take it for us for a little bit, just to take the message a little bit. Let's say you're alive in the time of Hanukkah, and the Greeks come along, and they're your friends, and they're okay. Listen, you can't do mitzvahs in public, but you can do them in private. You know, you don't tell anyone, we'll make a little minion in the basement, and we'll do a bit of learning, and you're okay, and pray, you know, they're not going to kill us, and they'll pass sooner or later, of course, Baruch will come, and the Yidden will escape this, these evil leaders, but right now we're okay. Nope, it's not true. The Maccabees came up, Kohanim, not fighters, they weren't fighters, they were Kohanim. They went and they fought for their lives. They fought for their lives, and it wasn't a joke. It's not a joke. They came and they fought for their lives, and they risked their lives to save Klal Yisrael, to do mitzvahs publicly. They risked their lives. So I was thinking, I think the message of Hanukkah, I think, as we're leaving Hanukkah now, we take it with us to the year, is you have to work hard in life. To be successful in your relationship with Kodesh Baruch Hu, to be successful in avoiding Hashem, sometimes you have to work hard. You take the message of Hanukkah, and you have to fight for things. You have to know what's right. I was thinking, I remember a few years ago, I wanted to talk a little bit. Someone asked me, actually. No, I'll just ask you. So a few years ago, when I was a little kid, I was thinking about 9 years old. I remember my sister was a very, very, very good violin player. Excellent violin player. I am not musically blessed. That's probably a compliment to myself. And there was I remember my sister, she said, my mother was a surprise when I was 9 years old. She took me and my sister into London, to the Albert Hall, to see a certain violinist play, violin concert. So I remember it was 3.5 hours, and to be quite honest, it was probably the 3.5 hours of excruciating pain that I've ever been through in my entire life. It was painful. And I remember after the concert, my sister, she said to me, how did you find it? I said, it was awful. She said, the best concert I've ever been to in my life. I've never in my life experienced such incredible things. And I realised, not then, because I was 9, but I realise now that sometimes with inyanim, with halacha, with parshas, with certain things, the more you invest in them, the more you try and appreciate the details of what's going on in Yiddishkeit, the more you come to love the mitzvahs and the more you come to be connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I was thinking of my sister, you know, she's hours a day practicing violin, and she's looking at the acoustics of the hall, and she's looking at how the orchestra's set up, and she's looking at what type of violin it is, how the strings. I see a piece of wood, some strings, and a guy doing this for 3 hours hurting my ears. Doesn't see that. And I realized that in life, the more effort you put in, the more hard work you put in, the more you take out. And this is the most ultimate message of Hanukkah. I'll tell you, someone came up to me last week in shul. I don't remember who it was, but I want to give them credit because the whole shiur is going to be based on what he asked me, so it's interesting. But I don't remember who he was, maybe. Yeah, came up to me in shul, and he said to me, why is Hanukkah always Parshas Mikats, Parshas V'yagash? Why is it always like that? Every year. So, what?
Nearly every year.
I speak like Chazal. Yeah, normally, Bederech Klal, normally. So I was thinking, so he comes up to me, so I said to him what I don't say to my daughter, which I don't know, I'm not sure, I don't know why, it's a good question. So I don't know, everyone here is probably like, it's Pasha, why? Yeah, and then I walked home afterwards and I realised it's so obvious why. Because when you look at these Pashas, you start to realise that the ultimate message of Hanukkah is the Jewish people are different from the non-Jewish world. A Ben Torah is different from someone who's not a Ben Torah. And when you look at Yosef, how he lived in Mitzrayim, he gets sold there, he's 18 years old, his brothers try and kill him, and they put him in a pit, and they sell him to Mitzrayim, it's mamish kefelach, he ends up in Mitzrayim, he ends up in prison, falsely accused. The whole thing is nishpasha at all. Right? A hard, hard life. But he stays strong. He stays strong in the Yiddishkeit, he doesn't move an inch. He doesn't move an inch from where he was. And that's the message of Hanukkah, that sometimes we're going to be in situations which are not easy. They're not easy when the non-Jewish world, when the non-Torah world tries to push certain things on the Jewish people. But we have to know where we are, and we have to be strong. And that's the message. I was thinking about Yosef. I mean, imagine, the boy's 18 years old. He's living in Potiphar's house. This woman... She's day and night driving him mamish mashuga like you can't believe. He's 18 years old, a frum boy. He's in this woman's house, and she's pretty, and she's this, and ayin sham, and she's trying, and every day he resists. He gives us certain koyach in our DNA to resist, to be strong in Yiddishkeit. And I was thinking to myself, you know, this is the message of Hanukkah, this is the message of Vayigash, this is the message of the Torah, is that we have to separate ourselves. I remember there's a Gemara in Gittin, a famous Gemara most people probably know. There's a Gemara in Gittin, and it has a whole story about Tisha B'Av, right? The whole story about, I think it's Nundav around there, I think, yeah? So there's a whole Gemara there in Gittin where it says about Tisha B'Av, there was a Rasha, and he was invited, there was a certain Yid, he was invited to a party, and they got the name wrong, and the wrong Rasha, Hamza and Bar Hamza, I always forget which one's what, and I don't want to say, yeah. So they invited the wrong Hamza, and he comes, and the Chazal, and it's a mamisha, a big argument, and Chazal, the sages who are sitting at the party don't say anything, and suddenly he gets very upset. So he decides that he's going to go against the Chachomim, and he's very upset, so he goes to Caesar's Palace, not the one in Vegas, he goes to Caesar's Palace, and he says to the Caesar, he says, you know, the Am Yisrael, they're rebelling against you, they're going against your ways. And Caesar says, nah, they're good people, they're good subjects, they pay the taxes, there's a low crime rate, they're easy people. He says, no, I'm telling you, they're rebelling. I've known people who know people who know people, and they're rebelling. And Caesar says, no, there's no chance. So this Russia, he says to Caesar, he says, I'll tell you what, send a Corbin, and when you send a Corbin, I guarantee you they won't offer it for you. So Caesar says, oh, okay, if you insist. So he sends this Corbin, a very nice Corbin, completely kosher. And on the way, this Rasha, he takes a knife or whatever, something sharp, and it's a machlokes in Gemara what exactly he does, but either he cuts the mouth, or he cuts the eye, a mum. He gives it a certain mum, which makes it pasul. You're not allowed to offer it. Now, the truth is, a non-Jew is allowed to offer such a korban. It's not. It's a bit beyond the scope of the shir, but a non-Jew is allowed, but a Jew is not allowed to offer this korban. So they get to the Beis HaMikdash, and the Chazal, for whatever reason, a big thing, why didn't they do it? Shalom Bayis, Shalom Malkus, whatever, but have a look over there. They don't offer the korban. And because of that, the whole Beis HaMikdash is basically destroyed. Basically destroyed. Yeah, it's Russia. That's what he did. Many years ago, I was learning in Eretz, well, not many years ago, but many years ago when I was in Eretz Yisrael, I used to learn with a very choshev old man. And he once said to me, it was the day before Tisha B'Av, or maybe the day before that, and he said to me, I want to tell you the message of Tisha B'Av. I said, what? He said, why did Tisha B'Av? He said, what is Tisha B'Av? And this is to do with Hanukkah. He said, what is that story? What do you mean? He cut the eye, he cut the mouth, it's kosher for a non-Jew, but not kosher for a Jew. Why is that? What's the shaykhus? So he told me, because you know, when it comes to the eye and the mouth, that's what separates more than anything else the Jewish world from the non-Torah world. Is that if you live a Torah life, you can't just look at whatever you want to look at. You can't just say whatever you want to say. And even if you have a guest, and even if you and your wife know exactly what each other are thinking, and you know this person's a bit off and a bit strange, and you know that no one's looking, I'll look here, I'll look there, it's just a poster. At the end of the day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's a Torah and there's a Mahalach, how to be connected and avoid this Hashem. And that's the difference between us and them. That's the difference. That Hanukkah teaches us that even when we're in the most terrible situations, the Kodesh Baruch Hu, that we have to stand up for what we believe in and we have to use hard work. And it says, actually, I thought, on the subject of Yosef, and Yosef and his struggles in Potiphar's house, it says in Hallel, we just stopped saying Hallel now, it says in Hallel, it says the sea split, Hayam Ra'ah V'yanes, the sea split, and the sea saw, and it split. So Chazal say, it says when they left Mitzrayim, so the sea saw and it split. Chazal ask a question. They say, I think it's the Vilna Goin, says, what did the sea see? And it's a good poem. What did the sea see? What do you mean the sea saw and it split when they came out of Mitzrayim? It's obviously talking about when the sea split and Am Yisrael, they walked through. The Vilna Goin says, you know what it saw? It saw the bones of Yosef HaTzadik. It says that Am Yisrael, they used to carry everywhere in the Midbar, they used to carry the bones of Yosef HaTzadik. And when they were carrying his bones, the sea saw the bones and it split. Says the Vilna Goin, what's pshat? What's the bones of Yosef HaTzadik got to do with the sea splitting? Says the Vilna Goin, I'll tell you what it's got to do with it. Yosef HaTzadik is 18 years old, and Yosef HaTzadik goes against his nature of what he is as a person. Not, let's say, from a neshama place, but what a boy is at 18 years old, what certain tithers, what he's going towards, what people, cravings. He goes and he goes against everything, and he rejects, and he rejects, and he rejects, and just as he, Vilna Goin says, just as Yosef HaTzadik went against his nature, so too the sea saw the bones, and it was willing to go against its nature. It was through the hard work of Yosef HaTzadik that the sea split and Am Yisrael were redeemed through there. I know often we hear these stories and we kind of think of, yeah, but a long time ago and they were big, big tzaddikim. I don't know, like me, like, come on, I go to work and I do this. It's hard for me. I'm not Yosef HaTzadik bringing me riyas from Yosef HaTzadik, bringing me riyas from Yaakov Avinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, it's enough for me. So I'm going to tell you a story. I heard this story a while back from a Rosh Kollel, so I don't think he would mind, and I heard, he said it publicly, and he heard it from the son of Rav Scheinberg. So many years ago I learned Torah, and the son of Rav Scheinberg told this story to my Rosh Kollel. This is how the story goes. So I want to show you, just as the Am Yisrael through Yosef's mitzvahs had a certain siyata d'shmaya that the sea split, so too I want to show you that how even in our generation, a few years ago, that even people of our generation have siyata d'shmaya and things. So I heard a story like this from my Rosh Kollel, and he heard it from the son of Rav Scheinberg, who was there. Rav Scheinberg was on an aeroplane, and he was thinking he was going collecting. I think they were flying to America, to the USA. And on this flight, they had one of those, I'll just explain for those people who don't know, they invented this thing a few years ago called a television. And what it is, they put it up there, and you look at it, and it shows, like, pictures and everything else. So they have this television thing on every four or five rows. This is, believe it or not, this is before the handheld television devices that no one in the room has. But before this generation, they used to have these every four or five rows. Every four or five rows, they'd have a television on the plane, and they'd show whatever, movie, something or else. So Scheinberg's on the plane. And, well, he's learning in the summer. And his gubba, he says to the people, the four rows in front, he says, listen, would you mind, he's a very choshev, a man, a very holy man, would you mind if we covered over the television, if we didn't turn it on? Yeah, that's what they said to the four rows of people who could see the screen. So, Baruch Hashem, there were some frumyadin, and Baruch Hashem, there were some people who were very respectable, and they said, yeah, it's no problem, you can cover the screen, no problem. So they're fine. So they go to cover the screen and the thing with the kantz and mechitza, yeah. And the stewardess, she comes along and she said, I'm very, very sorry, sir, but due to health and safety or whatever it is, we're not allowed to cover the screens in case there's an emergency and whatever else. Yeah, we have to show you how to do the things and we're not allowed to cover the screens. I'm very, very sorry, but that's the rule. So they said, okay, no problem. Then they go, okay, the film's starting in 5 minutes. 5 minutes later, they turn on the film. Every single television on the aeroplane worked. The one of Scheinberg wouldn't come on. Error, wouldn't come on. Wouldn't come on. This is a true story. It wouldn't come on. So they're playing with it, and the stewardess is there, and the steward, and they're poking it, and the whole thing. And Rav Scheinberg, he taps his son on the shoulder, and he says, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. So we just see that in life, if you make a little bit of effort for a Kodesh Baruch Hu, he'll definitely open up loads and loads of bracha for you. And we see. I know it's a true story. Let people hear that it's a true story. I was thinking on the inyan of hard work, of the inyan of working hard. The message of Hanukkah being to work hard, to be oisek in Torah mitzvahs. I saw one of the Chassidish Sfarim. He says like this, what's the difference between Yosef and Yosef and the Yiddish approach to life and the more kind of, let's say, non-Torah approach to life? So I think, let's look at Yosef's dream. So I saw like this, it says Yosef's dream, he has a dream, the first dream about the physical world. He had, and then secondly, more about the spiritual world. He has a dream, what's his dream? He has a dream that him and his brothers are working in the field. They're working in the field, I don't know exactly what they're doing, I'm a millennial, but something to do with wheat. There was some kind of wheating and chaffing. Yeah, whatever. Okay, have a look. I don't know. And they were working the field, and suddenly the, I don't want to sound like I'm not an agriculturalist, but there's some kind of went. Okay. So the stalks of the brothers, they bowed to the stalk of Yosef. That's Yosef's dream. That's Yosef's dream, right? Showing that they're going to bow to him in the future. Now, what's Paro's dream? What's Paro's dream? Paro's dream is a zoi. Paro's dream is, I was sitting by the river, I was having a sunbathe, I was just relaxing, and suddenly these big, fat cows came out the river, and then these thin cows came out the river, and then the thin cows ate the fat cows, hagadja, hagadja, and I was just, you see, I saw in the Chassidish Sfarim, he writes, you know, he says, you see the difference. When it comes to the frum, the Bnei Torah, we understand Yosef's dream. He's working in the field. Him and his brothers are working. And then the success comes after you work. In Paro's dream, I'll sit there. I'll do the minimal effort I have to do. What do I need? I'll sit there. I'm Paro. I'm a king. I'll sit by the river and I'll watch things happen around me. With Yosef, he's willing to work. He's willing to work in the field to make sacrifices. I remember many, many, many years ago, I was tutoring, kind of tutoring in Osameach. It's a yeshiva in Yerushalayim, which most of you know, for people, a lot of people there are Balei Tshuva. Not all, but a lot of them are Balei Tshuva. So I remember there was a boy there, very, very, very bright boy from England. And he'd done a year of university, and now he was taking a year, oh my gosh, he was taking a year off. Yeah, in yeshiva to learn Talmud. Fantastic. So I was meeting up with this boy once a week to see how he's doing. So he's in yeshiva a few weeks or months, I think, maybe a couple of months, and he's very, very, very inspired, to put it mildly. Let's put it lightly. And he comes up to me and I say to him, I think he's, I'll call him Stephen. I say to him, Stephen, I said, how's yeshiva? He's probably a Rosh Kollel today. I said, Stephen, I said, how's the learning going? And he goes to me, well, no, not very good. I'm not being matzliach. I said to him, what do you mean you're not being matzliach? You're a bright boy, you're studying law, isn't it? He says, no, not being matzliach. I said, why not? He said, I'll tell you why. I said to him, well, what's the story? How much effort do you put in? The reward is in the effort, right? Gemara Megillah, if you make an effort, a Kodesh Baruch Hu will guarantee you Torah. How much effort are you making? So he says, listen, I was in university in London, I think it was UCL, somewhere like that, in a good university, and he said to me, I used to have 5 hours a week of lectures. 5 hours a week of lectures, and I used to do an hour a day of private study. Now, that's 5 days a week, not Shabbos and not Sunday. So that's 10 hours a week. So he said, every day in yeshiva, I do the same. I go to shir, it lasts about an hour, and then after shir, or at night time, I do another hour with my study partner. And I'm not being matzliach. So I said to him, you're in a different world now. You're in a different world. You're coming from a world where you'll do the minimum you can to succeed. When it comes to being successful in Avodas Hashem, you have to do the maximum you can. You have to push yourself as much as you can. You don't say, oh, since I did an hour of lectures a day when I was in university, and now I'm in yeshiva doing Talmud study, so I'll do an hour a day, and a Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to make me the Vilna Goyim. It doesn't work like that. You have to work hard. You have to know, who am I? Where am I going? And then you have to make a plan, and you have to work to succeed. That's the message of Hanukkah, it's the message of all of these parshas. I was, just when it comes to being inspired in these parshas, it's very, very, very easy. I mean, I saw in the parsha, it says Yaakov hadn't seen Yosef for, what is it, 20, I think a bit shtickle machloikis, but around 22 years. Yeah, let's say 20 odd years. He hadn't seen his son for about 22 years. Twenty-two years he hadn't seen his son. He thinks he's been sold to slavery. He thinks that his mum has been shachted by the other brothers. He suspects them, and that he doesn't know what's going on. They say he didn't have proper Ruach HaKodesh. He didn't have proper Simcha for 22 years. Suddenly he finds out that Yosef's alive. He's alive, and he goes to Mitzrayim. And he goes into Mitzrayim, and the first thing he does is, well, I want to see my son, right? I want to see Yosef. So Yosef goes and he meets Yaakov. The Parsha says, the way Rashi learns like this, the Pasuk says that Yaakov, he met Yosef. And Yosef, oh, should I go back? Sorry. It says that, I'm used to beatboxing. It says that Yaakov, he met Yosef, and Yosef fell on Yaakov's neck. Yosef fell on Yaakov's neck and he cried. It doesn't say what Yaakov's doing. It doesn't mention what Yaakov's doing. It doesn't mention. So I looked at Rashi, and Rashi does what he does. He has a kasha, which is what's Yaakov doing. And he says something, which I think is it a Gemara in Megillah? I can't remember. I think it's a Gemara, maybe not in Megillah. But he says, you know what Yaakov was doing? He was saying Kriyat Shema. When Yaakov met Yosef, the happiest time of his life, he thinks his son is Chas V'Shalom, he thinks his son is Nifta. He thinks his own children have killed their brother. After 22 years, he realizes, he goes to meet him, and he sees that he's not only is he alive, he's a Ben Torah. It says that Yosef sent the wagons to Yaakov, and Yaakov realized that was the last thing they learnt was about a related topic. The Ruva, right? Which is linked to, he sees he's a Ben Torah, he sees he's a mensch, he sees that his children are being raised Derech HaTorah, even in the most polluted cesspool of spirituality you could ever live in. But he's strong, and he's Chazak, and he says Kriyat Shema. So I read this Rashi, and I don't know. I was like, what is Rashi talking about? He said Kriyat Shema. Why would he say Kriyat Shema? So at first I had a kind of I'm going to call it my own Peshat, which is, I'll just tell you, I'm sorry, my own Peshat is like this. I once gave a shiur on Hilchos Kriyat Shema, and there's a big machlokes between the Goyin and the Mogen Avraham. So the Goyin holds that the Zman of the Kriyat Shema is, it starts at Nates, and the Mogen Avraham holds it starts at Amud HaShachar. So you get about an hour extra if you follow the Vilna Goyin. Now saying, In Eretz Yisrael, so they're machmir for the Mogen Avraham. So this man stops an hour earlier. Whereas in Chutzlo, as Yosef was, they were makel for the Goyin. So therefore, it was this man. It's only a joke, Rabbi Yisrael, don't worry. They were machmir. He was machmir. Yaakov was machmir, and Yosef was okay because he was writing on the latest man. It's just a joke, don't worry. Okay, so, but I saw Rashi, and I had a look around, and I saw in the Maharal, Mamish asks a question. He says, why is he saying Kriyat Shema for? Why is he saying Kriyat Shema? So the Maharal says that when you have simcha in life, when you have pleasure in life, You have to channel it towards the Kodesh Baruch Hu. When, if you're a tzaddik, I don't know about Bismanenu, in our times it's difficult, but I'm saying Yaakov Avinu was such a tzaddik, he was on such a madrega, that when he saw Yosef, when he had Simcha in his heart, he wanted to bring HaKodesh Baruch Hu into the picture. I saw Rav Sternbach adds, he wanted to bring HaKodesh Baruch Hu into the picture. See, today it's very easy, because today, I was in Eretz Yisrael for about 12 years learning, right? And I noticed a massive difference between before I left and when I came back. Not just the fact that I now knew Aleph Beis, but a big difference that I noticed when I came back from Eretz Yisrael is there's an obsession with phones. People are very, very, very obsessed with phones. I was gone 12 years. You come back, I take my children to the park here in Manchester, and I'm standing around, and you see, I'm not cussing, criticizing anyone. I suffer from this. But you see people with their children, and they're pushing it on the swing, and they're doing this. Smile. No, you're not smiling. You're not. And the kid's like, I'm just on a swing. Let me just be honest. No, but if you just smile once, and then I'll push... There's an inyan, I don't know what it is. There's always something missing. People feel like they're missing something. But I have to take a picture right now. I don't take a picture, so the moment's going to be gone. But you're ruining the whole moment. The whole moment is going to be you taking pictures. So I was just thinking, when it came to Yaakov, he's been through the most ultimate suffering you could ever imagine. He thinks his son's gone. Suddenly he meets his son. He has every right to say, listen, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I don't understand anything. But this is between me and Yosef. This is a moment for me and Yosef. It's too much for me. He does the complete opposite. He wants to bring HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the picture. He wants to share this moment of joy with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's like a relationship. It's the three of us here, all hugging. I'm literally hugging Yosef, and I'm saying Kriya Shema. Now, there's also a deeper inyan here as well. Imagine Yaakov suffering. Yaakov suffering is, you can't imagine. He went through things which you wouldn't even wish upon your enemies. Things with Yosef being sold to slavery, and terrible things with the other children as well. And terrible, terrible things. But the worst, and then suddenly he thinks Yosef's gone. He sees Yosef's alive. He goes to Mitzrayim. I'll tell you what I think is happening, what Rashi also maybe means. When he finally sees Yosef, he sees, you know what, there's a famine in the land of Canaan. Do you know what, we need to go down to Egypt. He gets to Egypt and he sees Yosef running Egypt. He sees the Yehudah set up a yeshiva. He sees that Yosef's going to let them live in Goshen. He sees that Yosef's the prime minister. He sees Yosef's frum. He says, Ephraim and Manasseh are frum. He says, everything made sense to him. Everything made sense. All the suffering, all the shvach things that he went through his whole life, everything made sense. And what do you do when everything made sense? You say, Shema Yisrael, Shem Elokeinu, Shem Echad. So I don't understand everything, why it's going on. Of course we don't. There's no way. But at the end of the days, we'll understand. Exactly. You'll understand. And I think that's the message. What does Rashi mean? Efshar to say, what does Rashi mean when he says Kriya Shema? He means that he understood in that second that everything along the lines, all the suffering, all the brothers, everything that they'd gone through with Yosef, everything made sense. Because now Yosef's the king of Egypt and he's going to look after us and he's a Ben Torah. It's interesting. In the Parsha, it actually says, I saw an amazing Chofetz Chaim. The Chofetz Chaim says that when Yosef and his brothers are arguing it out about you're spies, you're not spies, you're this and you're that, Yosef, suddenly he's overwhelmed. He's overwhelmed. Suddenly he's overwhelmed by emotion. He can't cope anymore. With Binyamin and everything else, he's overwhelmed by emotion. And he says, I need Yosef. I need Yosef. I'm Yosef. And the brothers accept that he's Yosef. Come closer and he shows them whatever. So, any Yosef. That's it. Everything made sense. After all the years of the most tremendous suffering you could ever imagine, the brothers and Yaakov and Yosef goes there, and then they're spies, and they're accused of being spies, and they're thrown in jail, and they make a Benyamin, and the whole mummish thing. So, any Yosef, suddenly everything clicks. Everything makes perfect sense. The Chofetz Chaim says at the end of days, the Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to look at the Jewish people, and he's going to say, Ani Hashem. I'm Hashem. I'm Hashem. And everything we've been through as a people, all the challenges, everything will make perfect sense. Just like it made sense to Yosef. I saw it. I don't remember where I saw it, I have to be honest. But I'm pretty sure it was a letter. But I'm not 100%. There's a famous Ramban. I don't know how famous it is, but I've heard it a few times. The Ramban had a certain Talmud. Maybe you'll know. The Ramban had a certain Talmud. And this Talmud was always asking kashas. Always. What about why this and why that? All these kashas. Good kashas. We're showing them deal with all these kashas, right? But he's asking kashas all the time. So this Talmud eventually, the Ramban writes, eventually this Talmud was nifta. Eventually it was nifta. And the Ramban writes, not me, I'm not saying this, the Ramban writes that the Talmud came to him in a dream. And he said, now I'm here, everything makes perfect sense. Everything, all the kashas I have make perfect sense. So we should have a munna, we should have a tochen, that the Chodesh Baruch was running the world. And you see through Yaakov, for all the things that he went through, for the sale of Yosef, for all the going down to Mitzrayim, the Chodesh Baruch has a plan for all of us. And we just have to hold on and kind of ride the wave sometime a little bit. What, talking about Kriya Shema, I actually saw Gemara Pesachim, very interesting. Also, the Kriya Shema is very... It's funny, this Parsha, you see, Api Mefarshim, you see that Kriya Shema is mentioned twice. If anyone gets this, I'll be very impressed. The first time is by Yaakov, saying it to Yosef, and there's a second inyan of Kriya Shema, which is mentioned. Anyone know? So, it says like this, Gemara Pesachim, it says that that Yaakov Avinu, oh, it's not this, maybe it's next week, I apologise. Oh, I'm sorry, my boy Sam, sorry. Everyone would have got it, I'm sorry. I'll come back next week. I'll ask the same question, you can prepare. So I'm sorry, I've made a mistake. So Yaakov Avinu, he's on his deathbed. He's on his deathbed. Oh, now everyone's nodding. Very good. I will come back next week. So Yaakov Avinu is on his deathbed. He's dying, and he sees that everything was Siyata Deshmaya, everything was from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he's sitting there, or lying there, probably, and his sons are all around him. And it says, Shekhinah. The Torah hints at this, but the Gemara in Pesachim brings it out a little bit more. It says that the Shekhinah left him. In a certain sense, I don't know exactly what it means, he felt a loss of Ruach HaKodesh. He wanted to tell his children when the end of days would be, when's Mashiach coming. Yeah? And it says he wasn't able to. Kodesh Baruch Hu took away the Nevuah from him. So Yaakov Avinu, he looks around and he says, my sons, one of them's off. He said, Avraham had one. Oh, did Avraham have one? And Yishmael, oof! And Esav, my gosh, nuts! And he said, Yitzchak had, and now me. I've had one. One of them is bad. One of them's a bad egg. And therefore, the Shekhinah can't be here. It can't rest in such a place. Said the sons together in unison, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Listen, Yisrael, listen. Hashem is one, we are one. We believe. None of us are off. We all believe. And Yaakov Avinu, he looks at them and he says, Baruch Shem Kavod Makusol Elam Be'ed, blessed be the name of the glorious kingdom for all eternity. That is Simcha. I don't care what anyone says, there is no greater Simcha in the world than if someone's son's Talmid Chacham. Yeah, my son's four. But I'm saying, there's no, there's no Hashem, yeah? His mother thinks he's Tamchol. But anyway, so there's no greater simcha in the world. You see, your son, 12 children, through suffering and hardships, B'nai Torah, mitzvahs, that Oisek in Torah, there's no greater simcha. And to think, Hashon, one of them may be straying a little bit, is agonizing. He says, Baruch Shem Kavod Makhzor Ed. Chazal say in the Gemara in Pesachim, they say, well, what do we do with that? What do we do? See, he said, Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus Olam Ve'ed. So we want to say Kriya Shema, and during Kriya Shema, we want to say Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus Olam Ve'ed. But we can't say it because Moshe never said it. So if we start saying Mitzvah's Kriya Shema, and then we say Baruch Shem Kavod, people are going to think that it's written in the Torah. But it's not written in the Torah, and it's all a bit confusing. So therefore, we say it very, very quietly. Right, we say it very, very quietly. But you see the inyan in this parsha of having trust in the Kodesh Baruch Hu, that you believe that Kriya Shema and Baruch Shem Kavod and how they go together. I'll just say very, very quickly. When we're preparing. When you want to be when you're striving for Avodas Hashem, to be a Ben Torah, I saw a Pirkei Avos. In the Pirkei Avos, there's a certain Peirush on the Pirkei Avos called the Midrash Shmo. Right? There's a Pirkei Avos, it says in Pirkei Avos like this. If you learn Torah, when you're poor, you will learn Torah when you're rich. As in, a Kodesh Baruch Hu will give you panas, he'll give you money, you'll be rich. Rich! You'll be an usher, you'll be rich. The Midrash Shmo, he asks the Kasha, yeah? He says, I saw with my own eyes as well, I visited many, not many, but I visited a few Gedolei Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael. They're not very rich. I once went to see Rav Steinman, yeah? Pardon?
I
That's one teret. Yeah, that's not what the Midrash Shmuel says. Definitely one teret. So I once went to see Rosh Steinman, and I was very excited to see him. I just went to Yeshiva, and I was like, I'm going to see a Godel, get a Brocha. I ever had certain kasha to ask him about someone here. He was sitting on a mattress learning. A mattress. I went to see Rav Chaim Kanievsky. Maybe not a mattress, but just normal, very positive flat, nothing to write home about. Hey, the Chofetz Chaim didn't have a couch. They tell certain stories. I don't know if it's true. I never saw that, obviously. But you see, the Midrash Shmuel says, you see in the Ganzer Welt that there's people who learn a lot of Torah and they're big tzaddikim and they don't have any money. So what? He doesn't understand the Pekabos. He asks it as a kasha. So the Midrash Shmuel answers like this. There's other teretzim as well, but I saw the Midrash Shmuel writes like this. The Midrash Shmuel says, if you learn Torah poor, if you learn Torah and you don't have good capabilities, you don't have the best brain, you don't have the best Rebbe, you didn't have time to go to Yeshiva, a Kodesh Baruch Hu will bless you with Torah. The richness that Pirkei Avos is talking about is not material wealth. He's talking about Torah wealth. That when you learn Torah and you don't have great capabilities, you don't have the best head, a Kodesh Baruch Hu guarantees you that eventually you will learn Torah with wealth. You'll be an usher in Torah. So I wanted to take that message and put it to all mitzvahs. When we see with Kriya Shema, I wanted to talk about hard work, about doing mitzvahs in the proper way. That we see that if you make an effort with mitzvahs, I know it's hard. We all struggle. I struggle more than you can't believe. We all struggle with mitzvahs, to do them properly with kavanah. Two messages. One is the more you learn about mitzvahs, just as we see in the violin story, the more as you learn about mitzvahs, the more you appreciate them, the better that you'll do it. And the more you throw yourself in and just try, just take a deep breath and try and do the mitzvahs in the proper way, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kal v'chomer, even with Torah learning and with mitzvahs, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will open up wellsprings of bracha for you, and your mitzvahs will have tremendous success. I'll just say quickly, just finish. Let's finish on this note. Avraham Avinu, I saw when you listen to Shirin, maybe not my Shirin, but other Shirin, which are very, very inspiring, you'll hear certain Shirin, you'll be inspired. You hear certain inyanim in life, and you think, oh, I'm inspired, that's it, from now on. And then the next day it kind of passes, you know, dwells out a little bit more. Oh, I once heard a Shirin about that, but I don't remember exactly what he said. So I just want to tell you like this. I once heard a Rav, he quoted from a Chassidish source, I can't remember who the Rebbe was. He quoted like this, by Avraham Avinu, it says that he had to shecht Yitzhak. Kodesh Baruch Hu said to Avraham Avinu, you have to go and you have to sacrifice your son. Going against everything Avraham Avinu believed in. Everything. Chesed, kindness, going against everything. It says Avraham Avinu took Yitzhak, woke up early in the morning, he didn't delay. And he took wood with him, so he'd be able to do the sacrifice. Says one of the Hasidic Rebbes, why did he take wood with? The Kodesh Baruch Hu wants him to do a sacrifice. I'm sure he'll take him somewhere where there's wood. Kodesh Baruch Hu made the world. He can take him somewhere where there's wood. Well, there's no wood in the desert. There's no wood in the forest. What did he take wood with? Schlepping this big timber wood with, I'm shechting my son. Come on. He's upset. Says his Hasidic Rebbe. Because when he got there, he didn't want to have an excuse. If he would have got there and there's no wood, he could have said, listen, there's no wood, what can I do? It's not my fault, I'll go home. We learn out that at the end of the day, when you have inspiration, when you feel inspired in life, when you want to be a Ben Torah and a Avodas Hashem, you have to grab on and make plans and stick to them and stick to them and stick to them. And that's the message of Hanukkah, to be a Ben Torah. We should take this message of Hanukkah, we should take the message of the inspirational passages, go from strength to strength in our Avodas Hashem. Thank you very much. Oh, yeah.